Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking to global financial markets and asking our panel what the return of volatility following an almost abnormally calm 2017 means for investors. We'll explore the global landscape and discuss some specific markets, in particular across Asia, as we assess some macroeconomic and geopolitical factors that are shaping the space. We'll consider, as always, how investors should best position portfolios to capitalize on volatile markets and explore what might happen next. We start with Kiran Ganesh, Executive Director at UBS Wealth Management. Kiran, perhaps you can give us an overview. How do we look at market volatility?
It's typically measured in financial markets in just a couple of ways. I mean, one is pretty much looking every day, do stock markets rise and fall a lot or do they rise and fall a little? And then another way of looking at it is, if you invest at any one point in time, what's the maximum you might have lost in a given period? And if we look back last year in 2017, it was an exceptionally low volatility environment. We saw dozens and dozens of days where the markets would barely move at all. And the maximum you could have lost if you'd invested at any point through the year was less than 3%, which is historically very, very low. Now, what we've seen going into 2018 is that the markets are swinging around a lot more, and there has been quite a high potential for loss. If you'd invested towards the end of January when the market was at its peak in global stocks, you'd be down now by around 7%. So we've definitely entered a new higher volatility environment after a very low volatility period in 2017.
Hartmut Issel, equity strategist in the UBS CIO, to you next. 2017 was almost abnormally calm in terms of markets, but volatility seems to be back in 2018. How did this happen and what does it mean for investors?
Let me also give you the regional perspective here for us in Asia. Of course, we've also seen bouts of volatility. So typically the way this mechanism translates is that when, especially in lead markets like the US, you know, have more inflation that is coming up. So and as a result of that, you see also the yields steepening, or not steepening, but the long end in any case coming up. That certainly has repercussions in Asian markets. The areas where we see it the most are the so-called current account deficit countries. So right now we're talking here, especially India, Indonesia, or also Philippines, where to varying degrees, the currency then comes under pressure a bit. The bond markets and most of the time also the stock markets, and that's how it translates. And as a result of that, we also see some of the central bank. We just have seen the Philippines yesterday. Maybe next week we may hear from the BI, the Indonesian central bank. So, you know, the counterparts of central banks here are starting to prepare for slightly tighter monetary policy to smoothen this volatility out.
Ewan Potts from Bloomberg, crossing to you next. 2017 was certainly calm in terms of market moves, but volatility is back. What have you made of the changes?
2017 really was a year of exceptional calm on financial markets, particularly on equity markets. One of the most widely traded measures of volatility, the VIX, which measures volatility of many of America's top companies, it reached its record low in November of last year of 9.1. Typically, the gauge trades levels around 19. That's its average level over the last 30 years or so. So 2017 really was a period of unusual calm on the markets. Now, a few months ago, that period of calm came to an abrupt end, and that caused more problems than you would expect. A lot of people have been betting against volatility. They've been engaged in a trade called short volatility, which is a strategy of betting against turbulence in equity markets. That strategy worked very well for 2017. It was an easy way to make small returns. Nobody thought there was going to be any volatility. But when that volatility suddenly returned, a lot of people were in quite a tricky position.
So that's the backdrop. But what's behind it? What are the factors shaping the developments you described a little earlier? Kiran Ganesh.
I think there's a couple which are really in the forefront of people's minds. One is just the simple notion that the world economy has been growing relatively well for quite a long time now. I mean, the last real global downturn was in 2008 and 2009. So we're now, you know, 9 years on from that, and we haven't really seen a downturn since then. And there are some signs that maybe this cycle is getting a bit long in the tooth. We've got very low levels of unemployment. That means that companies typically need to start increasing salaries. It starts to get harder to hire people. Perhaps that starts to affect profit margins. And there's some signs that inflation is starting to increase. Central banks are now talking more and more about increasing interest rates, which, again, these are all typically signs that the economic cycle is getting a little old. And then the second thing is just the amount of geopolitical risk out there. We've obviously had in recent months issues over Korea and the Middle East. There's political risks in places like Italy, elections across the emerging markets, and a bit of a sense from many investors that one of these could lead to some sort of accident that leads to higher commodity prices or problems in supply chains or a trade war. So some sense that the economic cycle may be disrupted by geopolitics or may just simply be getting too old, I think, are the key causes of the higher volatility that we've seen this year.
Let's consider the investor position next. Hartmut Issel, if we can come back to you, what are the key factors regarding investor behaviour, both in terms of what they should be looking to do and also what they should be avoiding, what the pitfalls are?
First of all, what I would like to mention is that higher volatility in and of itself doesn't necessarily mean that there are no returns to be made. It's just it feels a bit more difficult. Now, especially Asia, if I come back to the region here, tends to be a bit more late cyclical, and for the better part of this year so far has actually led a bit the global market, so performed at least a little bit better, which is sort of what you would expect at this point in the cycle when things already mature a little bit. But certainly one of the areas that we're highlighting in the equity space, for example, is to link equity investments also with longer term trends. So really trends that last longer than just one business cycle. So here in Asia, some of the things we're looking at for in particular are rail-based transport systems for the larger cities. As a comparison, Asia has by far the largest number of so-called mega cities, so 10 million plus population. And except for maybe really the highest tiers, many of them don't possess rapid transport systems. But actually built, the way they're built is very dense. So this is one of the longer term trends where we see actually budgets doubling probably for two decades in a row. Other ones are healthcare, for example, where there's still a lot left to be done. So combining the equity exposure with some of the longer term ideas to us seems to be one way of smoothing the volatility a little bit.
Kiran Ganesh, earlier you'd already mentioned inflation, interest rates, central banks, political flux. Are these indeed some of the key things that investors need to keep in mind?
What we're saying to people is to say, look, you need to monitor these things. You need to keep watching geopolitics. You need to keep watching inflation, interest rates, because clearly if inflation and interest rates start to rise substantially, then we're going to be in for a very volatile period. And likewise, if there's some sort of trade war between the US and China. But we certainly don't think that this is a time when people should be disinvesting and sort of hiding sort of under the mattress. We think it's just a time where people need to stay invested. I mean, after all, it's a period where we do actually have the strongest growth that we've seen in around 7 years. So we think it does pay off to be still invested in markets, but just undertake a few strategies to try and mitigate risks in portfolios and try and reduce exposure to some of the most volatile elements.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll ask our panel to remind us why volatility isn't necessarily a dirty word. Let's head back to Singapore now. Hartmut Issel, what about some of the Asia-specific risks, be that politics of the Korean Peninsula, the risk of a hard landing in China, for example? What's front and centre in the minds of you and your colleagues?
Yeah, we have fought for quite some time, and I think I was also earlier on the program when the issue around North and South Korea seemed to be a bit more tense than it is right now. So the view hasn't really changed that much. We certainly saw that none of the two sides, or especially North Korea and the U.S., can have an interest in a military escalation for various reasons. So we had the probability of something really escalating quite low to begin with. Now, next month, as both of these leaders will meet here in our city in Singapore to have talks eye to eye. So let's see what comes out of that, but it certainly does not speak in favor of an escalation. In terms of China indebtedness, I think you have to give some credit now to the authorities that, you know, since about 18 months or so, you see more and more increasing signs that suggest that at least sort of capping the indebtedness. I'm not saying necessarily to bring it down, but at least making sure that relative to the GDP, it doesn't accelerate any further, seem to be doing a reasonable job. I mean, let me just quote you one example. You know, if you looked about 18 months ago, the so-called wealth management products, you know, bit off balance sheets here and there, deemed to be a bit more risky, although not all of them necessarily were, but some of them were. They grew about 40-50%. Now they're growing almost zero. So, you know, it just shows you how serious the sort of de-risking efforts for the economy are. One risk that hasn't been mentioned that we don't think is an extreme risk, but also something we look at on the downside, maybe with a 20-30% possibility, is of course there's of an outright trade war, not the base case, but certainly something that needs to be watched here, especially Asia, not only China, but, you know, all the integrated supply chains play a part in this. So if something happens, not only China would be affected.
Despite all of this, the notes of caution we've heard, it is presumably worth remembering, Ewan Potts, that volatility isn't always a dirty word. Although it's often used pejoratively, it can be a good thing. It can be a corrective and certainly can present opportunities.
Yeah, one of the concerns about low volatility is that perhaps things are getting too comfortable. Low volatility often coincides with a period of rising values. We saw over 2017 stocks around the world rising quite sharply. So that period of low volatility, everything being okay, things looking rosy on the markets, sometimes there can be a worry that things have swung too far in that direction. And historically, we've certainly seen this has been the case. It's worth remembering that the volatility lows that we saw in 2007, that was the last time the VIX was very, very low. Well, that was followed by the subprime crisis, Lehman Brothers collapsing and the global recession hitting. So I think there's sometimes a worry that when volatility is too low, things are just too good. And that is often swings, as we often see in financial markets, in the other direction. So I think the fact that volatility has been rising gradually in 2018, perhaps getting back to slightly more normal levels, will be welcomed by many in the markets.
To the point, Kieran Ganesh, that certainly we've discussed before, indeed we did again at the start of this year, in fact, that volatility can be good, both from a macro and an investor viewpoint. Tell us more about that.
From an economic and a market perspective, it's good to have some periods of volatility because they can wash out some extended positioning. If you have years and years and years of very low volatility, you can end up with huge economic imbalances building up. So it is good to have some periods because it tends to lead to people reducing the amount of leverage they take, for instance, or reduces the number of people piling into any sort of given asset class. So from a macroeconomic perspective, it's good to have some of these periods. And also from an investor perspective, you know, we think it is good to have some of these periods because it should lead people to take another look at their portfolios, think about whether their investments are suitable, whether they are able to tolerate these levels of volatility, whether their investments are well lined up with their financial goals. So we think from a sort of a personal perspective, it can be sort of good to use these moments to take another look at one's portfolio and think about sort of what we're trying to achieve and whether it's heading in the right direction.
Finally, Kieran Ganesh, can you expand on potential investor missteps for us? What are the errors that some might make in these periods of returning market volatility?
One of the key missteps is to have too short-term a focus when there's an awful lot of headlines and news about financial markets or about geopolitics. People can be tempted to try and trade in and out of markets. Typically, this is an approach which leads to lower returns over time. There's a lot of evidence to show that investors who overtrade tend to underperform those who are taking a longer-term approach. So something we've been trying to discuss with many of our clients is to take a more long-term approach, think about which of your assets are really needed for spending over the next 2 to 3 years, which of those are to fund sort of the medium term, and which of those are really for the long term, perhaps for your retirement or for passing on to the next generation or for giving to charity. And kind of thinking in these buckets can help reduce the temptation for people to dive out of markets at the first sign of trouble, because typically what happens then is that you'll sell low and buy back higher. So having a long-term approach, I think, is the key thing.
And in terms of bigger picture, what else do we need to keep an eye on? Hartmut Issel, can you mark our card for us?
One of the events ahead of us here in the region is the introduction of the A-shares, so China domestic stock market, the second largest stock market in the world, in fact, getting now represented in the MSCI proxies starting 1st of June. Our advice here to investors is, you know, we have a reasonably positive outlook on this market, even without the inclusion. And you know, to be fair, the inclusion factor will be small initially. It will be stepped up over time. But we encourage the investors who are looking at the A-share market and possible participation to focus on the areas where, especially the foreigners, we know have a particular interest. Those are the ones that have less earnings swings, so maybe also can link it to volatility in a sense that the earnings growth is a bit more steady. Specifically, consumer staples and healthcare stand out here. And one other topic we have just brought up is that of high-end consumption in China. Over the next 15 years, high-end consumption is within consumers the area that is by far outstripping the midstream, but especially also the low-end consumption. And there's also a cyclical element to it where we think the, you know, anti-corruption drive that has occasionally dented a bit the growth numbers has also a bit surpassed its peak. So there is a structural and a cyclical element towards looking at the high-end consumption, either Chinese firms or indeed we even have some global firms included in this.
And that's Hartmut Issel bringing us to the end of this 188th edition of The Bulletin with UBS. Setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.